Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Just found out we're going to be on Thursday next week. We'll get to that in a second. But yesterday was a travel day for Jason and I, getting back from Atlanta United Motagua, and Atlanta United getting a result in the first leg of the round of 16 in what has been a interesting first 2 days of the CONCACAF Champions League.
Hashtag CCL fever.
It is. Montreal probably with very mixed emotions about what they did last night.
They better not be too mixed. Like, two away goals.
Yes, they were also up 2-0. But, yeah, I mean,
three injuries.
That boy.
Like, here's the thing.
And we'll get to Atlanta United in a second. If you were to go to a Montreal supporter at this time yesterday and say, you're going to get a 2-2 draw at Saprissa, I think unanimously they'd be like, okay, yes.
We're good.
Let's run to the airplane and get back home. But when you're up 2-0 and it ends up being a 2-2 draw, I guess it does have a slightly different feel. You're right. They did have a lot of it.
But you had to use all three subs on injuries.
Yeah.
And two of them in the first half.
Yeah, two very early.
So,
yeah.
You take it. You need to shake off whatever ill feeling you have from blowing a 2-goal lead late, and you have a party in Costa Rica, and then get back to Montreal.
And Atlanta United appears to be on track to play America. It appears, but America
both
needed a late goal to get a 1-1 road draw last night. You're right, exact same boat.
Yeah.
Both teams just needing to win next week at home to advance. Send us your questions at the bottom of your screen. You can tweet us as well. Before we break down everything from Tuesday night, Jimmy, let's get into what we have coming up next week, because I know some people have seen the announcements, others have not, but we're going to be in Nashville basically all next weekend starting Friday with two full days of coverage for the MLS opener between Atlanta United and Nashville.
Yeah, so we're going to be at Tailgate Brewery in Music Row, the Music Row location. If you were with us 2 years ago, same exact spot. We're going to be, Dukes and Bells will be kicking off 1 o'clock Central Time. It'll be they're going to do 1 to 5 or
four.
Yeah, four.
1 to 4 Central.
1 to 4, yeah. And then we're going to do a special Stoppage Time live episode, 2 hour edition from 4 to 6 Central Time. And we'll be hanging out afterwards as well.
I know a lot of people have been asking, why can't you do it later? We have a Hawks game on 92.9, the game that night at 6 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock Eastern. So that's why, but that'll be Friday. And then, of course, on Saturday, Jason and I will have the match call. Bundle up. Yes, I know all of you on Reddit are upset with me because I'm posting 10-day forecasts. And I only did it for
planning.
This reason.
Got a plan.
Well, and I only did it for this reason. Look, I look at the weather like 15 days out. If I see a trend developing, I know 10 days is inexact and a long way out. But if I see a trend developing, I'm going to pass it along. And AccuWeather for like 4 days in a row was calling for an ice storm next Saturday night in Nashville. So after I see that for 4 straight days, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to tweet that. And people can do what they want with the information. And I even said that. Like, this is inexact, but this is what has been trending for the last couple days. Well, AccuWeather came back today. They've taken the ice storm out of the forecast. That's the good news. No, no snow. No, clear.
No, like, orange ball.
No orange ball. But rivaling potentially the match in Minnesota for coldest match that Atlanta United has ever played.
Hell.
That also produced the second greatest victory in Atlanta United team history, according to our buddy Kevin Egan. But that's coming up next week. The focus before then, though, is on CONCACAF Champions League. There will be no squad rotation Tuesday night. I mean, there could be some different players in the mix because the visa situation is getting clarified for Josetu and for Mulroney. But it's not like Frank is going to play second choice on Tuesday with eyes ahead to Nashville. If anything, I think he goes all in on Tuesday, and then if something happens Tuesday, you regroup for Saturday against Nashville.
Yeah, that's where my head's at. It's all about the strongest lineup possible on Tuesday. You're in the driver's seat, and I know some people might look at this as 1-1 draw. How do I feel? It's been really, I think, interesting to see how Atlanta United fans have responded to this based off last year. Because last year, you're down 3-1. You have a hole to climb out of, but it's not crazy. You know, it's 2 goals. You're good. This one, it's even better. And I think the knowledge is starting to catch
yeah.
with what a Champions League is like,
mm-hmm.
what a two-leg series is like, and how hard it is to go to Central America and get a big result.
And I think you made a good point on John and Hugh this morning that Frank de Boer may have learned a little thing or two last year as well, because the UEFA Champions League and the CONCACAF Champions League are two completely different animals.
Yeah, I mean, even in the qualifying rounds where Frank de Boer had a good bit of experience, because Ajax, being in the Netherlands, they don't automatically go into the group stages of the UEFA Champions League. They have to start their season earlier than the league season and play international competition. Sounds familiar. But the difference is, even at those levels, you're going to fairly modern venues, fairly good quality pitches, in, you know, pretty easy to navigate cities. None of that was the case on Tuesday.
Right.
And it was far different than Costa Rica was last year. So you didn't come in and try to play, and Frank talked about this afterwards, you didn't come in and try to play building out of the back, traditional Atlanta United soccer, because you couldn't. Field was somehow lumpy and thick at the same time, and you couldn't make a short passing game work. It was too risky to play out of the back, so you play longer, and you rely on fight and guts and bollocks, and you find a way to get the result. You did.
There's a lot of long diagonals for Atlanta United.
A lot of just long ball, period. Not even a diagonal, just going and looking for the second ball.
But I think a lot of people were concerned that, oh, well, Atlanta United gave up 30 crosses. Well, Mataglia kind of was reduced to the crossing game for the same reason that Atlanta United was playing long, because short balls on the ground were not going to work.
And they don't really do that anyway. It's Mataglia is not a team who really plays with a true number 10. So for Mataglia, that's what they do. They pump it to the right side and they put in crosses. That's how they play. 30 crosses, 9 were good. You know, I mean, Kevin Lopez, the right winger, had 2 good crosses out of 11, according to Opta. You have to roll with that. It's percentages. You know, if you're playing a team that is shooting a lot of threes in basketball and they're not hitting very many, what are you going to give up? Shoot the three.
Let them shoot.
Go ahead, keep shooting. Yeah. We're going to sit here. You're not going to come inside.
Yeah, good analogy. So Atlanta United, as Frank de Boer said a couple times before the match, after the match, difficult circumstances, but fought, found a way to win. You got a result in a stadium where the U.S. men's national team has had a nightmare over the years, where Canadian and American professional teams, it's been a graveyard for them in CONCACAF Champions League against teams from Honduras and San Pedro.
I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Canada in the semifinal round, I think it was for 2014, all they had to do was go get a result in Honduras, like it's easy or something. And they went to San Pedro Sula and lost 8-1.
Yeah.
They just needed a draw.
Yeah.
And they come in and they lose 8-1.
It's a park that's just been an absolute graveyard for North American sides. It was a very invested crowd.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little bit of wonderment as to whether or not, you know, with Mataglia having to play 3 or 4 hours away from Tegucigalpa, if they would get support in San Pedro Sula, they absolutely did. Mm-hmm. It was a match of tremendous national pride for Honduras. So Atlanta United facing those obstacles, a referee that had no clue what he was doing, quite frankly.
that might be a little harsh.
Which, I'll say it. I thought it was very inconsistently refereed.
Yes.
I think we can all agree on that. He might have had somewhat of a clue of what he was doing. It was very, very inconsistently refereed. So you have that. Mm-hmm. You had the weather conditions, 85% humidity, almost 80 degrees at kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
You had the travel elements as well. You got into San Pedro Sula the day before. I don't believe Atlanta United could get out of there that night. They had to stay that night. So that's a difficulty. And then you're without your best center back in Miles Robinson. You're without Huzetu, who I think you're really counting on this year because he's got visa issues. You're without Mulroney, who's an important depth piece with a visa issue. You're without George Bello, who's going to be a left back and a big part of Atlanta United's plan this year. And Edgar Castillo, who might be the starting left back right now. And what do? You put Franco Escobar in the left, unusually, and it works great. You put Anton Walks at center back. It works pretty well. Mo Adams was responsible for the Mataglia goal, but that was one moment in 60-some minutes, where 59 of which he played pretty well. It worked, and it was, I just thought, a fantastic draw for Atlanta United. One of those draws that feels like a win. And now you're coming home to Kennesaw with a very straightforward path to the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League for the second straight year. But I think Motagua is better than Herediano was last year. I thought the challenge was tougher than the opening leg in Costa Rica last year. I know they're different teams and different styles, but I think Atlanta United should feel extremely good about how they started this year's CONCACAF Champions League compared to last year.
I think Herediano might be a better team, but Motagua was a more difficult opponent for Atlanta United because of style. I think Herediano played a similar kind of game, and Atlanta's better at that. Motagua plays a very different game, and Atlanta had to adjust to it. So I do think it's a much better result. I do think it's a much better result because you had more challenges this time. Not even that draw better than a two-goal loss, just you had so many more challenges. You had so many more challenges to deal with lineup, with not having a full bench, even with being year two of Frank DeBoer. Even with that understanding that was gained, you still came in and that 11 was posted. You didn't know what shape it was in. You didn't know how it was going to look. And it looked like something that nobody expected.
Well, and also Joseph Martinez, we forgot to even mention this, dealing with a flu or a fever. I don't know what exactly it was, a few days before the match.
CCL fever.
Right. Brooks Lennon taking a late knock in training. So, I mean, you're Frank DeBoer. You're signing Philip Goodrum to a four-day contract just because you need bodies. And I thought for Joseph in particular, I mean, the work rate that he put in for 90 minutes, and especially as Atlanta United saw the match out. This is one of the things that we've talked about a couple times, but I'll mention it here on Stoppage Time. I really like the way that Atlanta United saw out the match in Motagua, in the same way that they saw the match out against Leones Negros, in the same way they saw the match out against Birmingham, granted with a much different lineup at the end than the beginning in Birmingham. But these are good signs to see Atlanta United controlling the match in the final 10 minutes, you know, where basically Motagua was reduced to pumping in some low-percentage crosses and Atlanta United's dominating possession in the final 10 minutes. Very, very good to see. And Adam John was a part of that. Brooks Lennon was a part of that. But the fact that Atlanta United was able to do that with a sub still left in their pocket, I thought was very encouraging.
I think you work backwards, and we'll go back to Elfsborg because these are the games we've all seen. So Elfsborg, you finished better. And you had a different lineup at the end of that too, but you finished better than that group started. They kind of were wobbly when the changes started. Finished the match better. Birmingham, you finished the first half better than you started it. You got a goal late with the starters. Second half, started a little wobbly, finished well, got the win. Leones Negros, you fought through fatigue. You finished well. In Honduras, you finished well.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of a winning team. That's a sign of a strong team.
So Atlanta United dressed only 17 players on Tuesday. We know, or we're pretty sure, that number will at least go to 19 available, not counting the third goalkeeper on Tuesday, because it sounds like Huzetu's visa issue is close to a resolution. Same with Mulroney. I'm not going to speculate on anything else. I won't speculate on Castro. I won't speculate on Miles Robinson or George Bell or Edgar Castillo. The injured players I've mentioned are week to week, so let's forget that for a second. But now with Huzetu, we think Huzetu in the mix for Tuesday. Let's go to the whiteboard and talk about some of the lineup and tactical possibilities for Atlanta United to approach the second leg on Tuesday.
Okay, we'll start with how Motagua went in the 4-3-3. And you had Franco Escobar on the left. You had Meza and Waltz here. You had Mo Adams here to start, Brooks Lennon to finish. You had Jeff Lorenowitz, Eric Remedy as your two central midfielders. You had Emerson Hyndman, who was more of a deeper 8, not really a 2-10 up here. You had Joseph, you had Barco, you had Pitti, and they were tucked in a little bit more, not really playing way out here in the touchline. So how did it kind of play out at times? Franco Escobar, very bold going forward, no problems with him stretching the field even from the left side. Mo Adams a few times went forward. Brooks Lennon went forward more when he came on. up front, those three are very fluid. You know, you're going to get these guys tucking in here at times, so it becomes very narrow. Hyndman can come up and join in. It's going to be fluid in the front three no matter how it's configured. If it's 3-4-3, if it's 4-3-3. The questions when you bring in Hosetu and Mulroney. And let's go back to something Frank said after the match. One of the big reasons you went to 4-3-3 was the Brooks Lennon injury didn't give you a regular right wing back. You were limited in wing backs. Mo Adams probably better here than he would have been as a wing back. We saw him one time as a wing back, and defensively it was a struggle. So you go to this with getting Mo on his predominant foot. You know Franco Escobar can play on the left because you've done it once or twice. You also know that's where most of the play is going to come down through Motagua, so you want your better defender over there. You make that happen. You've got a lot of cover. It was a safe lineup. It was a smart lineup. And it was a lineup that could get the job done here. Now it's a different job on Tuesday in Kennesaw because you need to be more on the front foot. You need to control the game. All the things that Frank DeBoer and Atlanta United want to do. So how do you change it? Let's say you go back to the 3-4-3 and you want to play that. Let's talk here. Get these two up here. These two here, we'll drop this a little bit. And we're kind of in this type of scenario. All right, one thing that is really funny to me after the Montreal match last night, so much praise for Thierry Henry and the tactics. So much praise for what was called a 5-2-3. Was that really that different?
No.
I didn't think this could work, though. It's not that different. I mean, the wing backs in Saprissa, yeah, they're going to sit back a little bit more. It's going to look like a line of five. The three, now, the biggest difference in the way Montreal played it, and this is something that happens sometimes. I wouldn't call it a tactic Atlanta does. It's more about just how movements can result in things. Boyan was the number nine for Montreal. He's more of a false nine. He's going to drop in here. He wants to drag defenders with him to create space. Orji Okwankwo, Romel Kyoto are your wide players, not traditional wingers out here. They're more wide forwards. When Boyan drops, they can tuck in a little bit, and it kind of becomes like this, more like a 5-3-2. But Boyan is technically the number nine. These guys are technically wide. So this is why formations are really overrated because of the reaction to them. The way I think Atlanta plays it this time around, and Mulroney might actually be the one that goes straight into the lineup. I could see Mulroney on the left side here. I could also see him on the right side. It's going to be down to how Frank DeBoer wants to deal with the right side for Motagua, because we know that's where they're going to play. They've never shown a proclivity to attacking down the left. They just don't like to do it. They really didn't do it much in this one. They're going to play direct. And they're going to play here and put in crosses. They did connect on a great cross. Roberto Moreira, great cross. And the reason that happened, you mentioned Mo Adams. I want to show you a little bit of the movement with that. So, you know you've got the ball over here. This is how you're going to defend. You're going to get tucked back a little bit more in the three. So, you've got your forward, whether it's Rubilio Castillo or Gonzalo Klusener. They're going to occupy center backs, and Atlanta's going to have to make sure that that's covered. Now, in the three, what Motagua did very well that I think is handled better in this shape is Roberto Moreira, because he's listed as a forward. A lot of times he kind of plays in this zone, in this space, to where somebody's got to step to him, but everybody's looking at who's going to step to him. Well, what he did Tuesday night that was really difficult, and Mo Adams struggled with it, was he drifted out here. And the reason he kept drifting to this side is because the plays here, he's free because you're not really worried about him back here, but he would make this run in behind every time. Mo Adams lost him on the goal. Great finish, unbelievable finish straight out of the air. In the three, if he drifts, you've got two guys here for their focal point, you can cover him. He can go follow him. He can run around with him. I think the three center backs will actually help deal with Motagua more in this one because of what Moreira can do with his movement. So dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go 3-4-3, three center backs, let's assume nobody's back. You could play it actually a few different ways. You could keep Anton Walks here, and you could play Escobar Walks Meza, Lennon Mulroney, or Mulroney Lennon, whichever way you like. You could play Lorenowitz back here as one of these. You could play Escobar, take your pick. Lennon could play on the other. Mulroney could play in it. You've got a lot of scenarios you can do with that. Midfield, I don't know if you want to start Hosetu straight away, because I do think in the 3-4-3, which is what they've practiced the most, Frank said that after the match, they played four in the back in training Saturday. Mm-hmm. So in this role, there's a lot of, I think, chemistry needed with the two central midfielders, and I don't know what the best pairing is yet either. Is he going to be ready to step straight into that and be able to give you enough defensively, enough responsibility on that side in this kind of match? I don't think you need to rush it. I think you'd like to have him off the bench. Maybe you go Rometty-Heinemann if you drop Lorenowitz here. Otherwise, Lorenowitz-Rometty, Lorenowitz-Heinemann, whatever in this scenario to handle it. We'll set you in the second half. And then your front three is your front three. I think the three center backs will help deal with the situation that led to the goal for Matagua, and it led to a couple other opportunities with Moreira drifting and then slashing it. I think that's where we're at.
Okay.
Any other thoughts?
I think the one thing that we noticed a little bit on Tuesday, and we talked about a little bit on the full-time report, was, yes, it was a 4-3-3 that sometimes looked like a 3-5 or a 3-4-3, mm-hmm. sometimes looked like a 3-5-2, sometimes mm-hmm. looked like a 4-3-1-2,
sometimes looked like a 2-5-3. I mean,
it just kind of depended, but it worked.
Yeah, it worked. It's gonna morph. That's this style, and I think sometimes in soccer we define style and tactics way too rigidly. At its best, it's hard to define.
Yeah.
You know, at its best, you don't play one way in one shape where no matter if you're attacking or defending or in the midfield, you can see the shape and the lines. You're going to be able to at times,
right.
More so when you're defending, because that's when the shape's most important. But players are going to move around. They need to. They need to have the freedom to do that.
We're going
to
get to your questions in a second. Do want to just quickly look at the rest of the competition while we have a moment.
Yeah, there's a team I got to shout out.
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about what we have coming up tonight. Seattle Sounders, New York City are both beginning play. Both are on the road. You have said that the Mexican teams are probably going to be favored in all of their ties when it's all said and done. Some of the MLS teams are probably going to have some roadblocks in the first round. How do you handicap Seattle and New York City going into tonight?
I think New York City should be fine. San Carlos is having a rough year in Costa Rica. I think New York City, even with Ronnie Dyla in his first CONCACAF Champions League match, he's done the stuff that Frank DeBoer's done with his time at Celtic, and he struggled with Celtic because once you get out of Scotland, if you're a Celtic, the financials get very different, and you're not tested in the same ways in Scotland to go try to qualify for Champions League. So he's been through it. I think he gets how this competition will go. And he's got a team that is pretty much all back from last year. Mm-hmm. So he should be just fine in San Carlos. I think they get a result. If they win, great. If they get a draw, they're fine. The other one's going to be a little trickier because Seattle, Nico Ladero is questionable tonight. That's a huge miss if you don't have him. You've just added Miguel Ibarra, so you've got a little more depth. But defensively, I have no idea what the back four is going to look like. You've got two new center backs, one who was with you in the middle of last season, another one, Andrade, who's brand new this season. What is their chemistry going to look like? Shane O'Neill came over from Orlando. Does he get the start here? Who's at left back? Is it Nuhu? Is it Jovan Jones? What's your midfield going to look like? Gustav Svensson, there's a lot of questions about his availability now. I think people are saying they haven't seen him. He didn't play in the last preseason game. There's really no answers to this right now, so it's a lot of mystery with the Sounders.
And a lot of travel for them, too. I mean, that's got to be
and Olympia's a 7-hour flight. Olympia won the Honduran League last year. Now, they're struggling a little bit this year. They've lost some players from last year's team going into this. But all that national pride is going to come back tonight because this is an opportunity, if you live in San Pedro Sula, to see two CONCACAF Champions League games in your city in a couple of days, and you're cheering against the MLS teams.
Yeah, same park in which Atlanta United played on Tuesday. We've talked a lot about Montreal and Saprissa. Did you watch any of Club America last night? What's your takeaway?
Saw the highlights. Typical. I mean, you're going into Guatemala in this case, and it's difficult. It's not a pitch you're accustomed to. You didn't really dominate the game completely, but it never got away from you. It felt a lot like the Atlanta Motagua game.
Mm-hmm.
Miguel Herrera does not like Jair Marufo. Not a fan of his work. Said that he let a lot of things go. Called 22 fouls on Comunicaciones and like 9 or so on Club America, so I don't know what else he could have done. There was one that could have been a red card in the first half that looked pretty bad, and with VAR probably would have been a red card. But if you've had Jair Marufo in a game, you know he's not going to blow the whistle very much.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how he calls it. You know what to expect with him, and hey, he's consistent. The one we haven't talked about is Los Paquidermos.
Oh, yes. The
Elefantes Blancos.
Yes, the White Elephants.
Yes. Alianza.
Yes.
They come back and get a win.
Yeah.
They give up a goal to Tigres first, and they come back with two goals.
How big an upset is that?
It's pretty big. Does it mean they're able to get through?
I don't know.
Tigres got an away goal. That's the thing, is one goal at home, you're good. Tigres wins 1-0 back in Monterrey, they're good. But it's an unbelievable result.
Yeah.
It is a really exciting result. And out of all the games we've seen so far, the most lopsided game in terms of score and the way it felt was León and LAFC.
Right, which was 2-0 to León Tuesday night. Obviously, we didn't get to watch it because we were doing the Atlanta United game at that time. It sounds like LAFC did not play well. The Portmore-Cruz Azul match was bonkers crazy with two goals 5 minutes plus into stoppage time, one of them very fluky to equalize. So what looked to be a tremendous upset in the making for Portmore ends up being a road win with two road goals for Cruz Azul. They go back home now. Portmore's in big trouble.
Yeah, so, I mean, second legs, Portmore, have a fun trip. You know, that's about all you can get out of that. LAFC, are they out of it? No. Can they score two goals? Absolutely.
Can they do so without conceding?
That's the problem. The way that back line looked, I don't think so. Tristan Blackman not convincing at right back. Dejan Jakovic does not have the pace to play at this point, at this level, at this speed. I don't think they can get two goals without conceding one, which means then they'd have to have two more goals. They'd have to score four. They scored four before. We've seen it.
Four goals in like 10 minutes. We've seen that too.
But can they do it against Club León? It's a big hill for them. Club America should be fine. I don't know if Comunicaciones will travel so well, so I think they'll be fine. Tigres will have pressure on them, but they should be able to handle that. But the pressure right now, because Tigres isn't playing all that well in general, pressure is going to be pretty big, and I wonder how Tuca Ferretti handles the weekend games in Liga MX. Does he rest players, or you know, does he feel like, well, we can get through? We'll play our league match because we need the win, and we'll see what happens. Curious to see what Motagua does on their weekend match. They get a lesser opponent, but they don't have a stranglehold on the top spot in Honduras, so.
You know, but it's a very forgiving playoff.
The playoff format is the seeding's important. And you wonder how they felt coming out of it. You know, I remember seeing at the final whistle, a lot of Motagua players kind of collapse over like, we could have got some more out of this. And I wonder how they're going to feel with a league game and a long trip. Do they feel like they're in it? Do they feel like they have a real chance here? I think we'll get a glimpse of that when that lineup comes out for their weekend match.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. They're going to play... It is the 20th, so they play on, I think, Sunday, don't they?
I think it's Saturday.
Is it Saturday? I thought it was Sunday the 23rd, but I'm
pretty sure they moved it to Saturday.
Okay. Tuesday. That would make a lot of sense if they did. Okay, so that's kind of where we stand right now going into the second leg against Motagua. Let's take some of your questions now and keep them coming on the bottom of your screen or tweet them in to us, and we'll try to answer them as we go along here on Stoppage Time.
Before we get to the questions, shout out to Jason with the Canada 8-1 defeat in Honduras in 2012.
Mm.
Their worst defeat.
I remember the campaign too. It was for It was for 2014. Because I remember going into that, it's like, oh, Canada's going to get to the hex.
Yeah.
All they got to do is go get a result. They can pack it in. They forgot to pack anything.
And Honduras ended up making the World Cup, didn't they?
Yeah.
And so, go figure.
Let's see. Yeah, there it is. Shiva on Facebook says, what do we need to do in the second leg so Goose is not forced to into five incredible saves?
I think some of it's just going to be controlling the game. And you couldn't control that game on Tuesday with the pitch. Atlanta wants to control the game with the ball. If you have 60, 70% of the possession in this one, because I would expect Motagua is far more conservative in this, he's just not going to have as much of the ball in front of him. You know, he's not going to have as many shots against him. Motagua's not going to be able to create as much. So it's honestly, I think, that simple. It's just more possession, more control. They're going to have less chances.
You're never going to completely eliminate all chances in a soccer match, unless you play a 9-1-1 or a, you know, a 8-2-1 or something like that. And just like completely, you know, park the bus and slash the tires, which is not the way Atlanta United would have played on Tuesday, and it's just not in their club DNA. So you're never going to be able to completely eliminate all chances in a soccer match. I still point to the fact that Atlanta United has not given up more than one open play goal in any match they have played this year. And yes, I'm counting preseason, but I think that's important. I think that does count. They have not given up more than one open play goal in any match. It was a great goal by Motagua.
Yeah, it was. It was a really good
play
to them.
It was a really good finish, a really good cross. It was a great goal. There were some marking errors by Atlanta United. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen. You got to tip your cap.
Yep.
But to me, make it a non-issue by going out and get a couple quick goals in the first half in the action at the Fraction on Tuesday night, and we won't have to worry about that.
You had to do it. You had to do
it. It's not the last time you're going to hear it either.
I know.
All right, on Twitter, Christian says, aside from having a few more players available for the CCL home leg, how do you see the lineup looking? Will Tuesday's lineup be any different than what we roll out in Nashville?
I think it could be different just because it's Tuesday to Saturday, so, you know, it's still early in the season. Guys are not 100%. You could have some fatigue carry over. Definitely could see that. And you want to get Mulroney some minutes in one of the two games. You want to get Hosetu a good bit of minutes in one of the two games. You've got business to take care of with 90 minutes left in the round of 16 that you have to get through. There's a whole lot of MLS minutes to come. Even if the first 90 are not great, you've got a whole bunch more to go. You've got to take care of it Tuesday. That's first priority.
And some of your week-to-week guys, again, without speculating on injury, but it's very possible that Miles Robinson may not be available on Tuesday, but he might be available in Nashville. Same for Edgar Castillo. Mm-hmm. Same for George Bello. We don't know, but those are possibilities.
Or could be available for 30 minutes on Tuesday, but more on Saturday. Yeah. Those kinds of things will happen.
It's funny, all the concern about small roster, limited options right now. But when you get the Hosetu and Mulroney stuff to iron itself out, when you get Castro in here, and when you get Bello and Miles Robinson and Edgar Castillo healthy, then suddenly you're actually kind of stressing a little bit over some of these lineup choices that you're going to be making.
100%.
It's a good problem to have.
See, Richard Smith asked, do you think Hosetu will have a big impact on Tuesday?
I think a big impact on Tuesday might be a big ask. I think you need to be definitely secure Tuesday first, just because it's the second game of a round of 16. You got to get through. You can't really experiment too much. We don't know how much he's trained. We don't know how much he's in the mix with what Frank DeBoer wants out of this team. So I'm not expecting a huge impact. If he has an impact, I think it's as a sub in the second half when the game gets stretched a little bit, if Atlanta needs to go chase the game at that point.
See, Brian Harris on Facebook, he's asking if we advance in CCL, would Atlanta United host the second leg in the quarterfinal?
I think it depends on who they would play, right?
In the quarterfinal, they would host the second leg, I think.
Either way?
Yeah. I think it's the way the bracket falls because it's a bracket situation. Now, there's the question with venue availability that has come up that we don't know really any answers on.
For some reason, correct me if I'm wrong, for some reason I thought it actually had to do with performance in the first or in the round of 16. Like where it would go to goal difference or... I wish I remembered how that worked. I think the general assumption has been that Atlanta would host the second leg because that's what happened last year. It was bracketed in the same way because everything came out of the same pots last year. But I don't know that for sure. I don't know.
I think so, but we'll see if we can find that.
I'm trying to look it up.
Lob another question at us and then do some research.
Let's see.
Well, and just to interrupt.
Yeah.
I know why the question's being asked. We don't know exactly what the Mercedes-Benz Stadium availability situation is going to be after the Sporting Kansas City match, because the Final Four is going to take that building for about a month. And I don't know the exact date on when the conversion needs to occur, but I don't know. I don't want to assume that, okay, well, if it's first leg, it would definitely be at the Benz. If it's second leg, it would definitely not be at the Benz. I don't want to make any of those assumptions. Because
I don't think there's any definite knots yet.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I don't think there's any definite. It's definitely going to be at Kennesaw, if not Mercedes, no, or definitely going to be at Place X or Place Y. And this could be an issue that Club America might have to deal with as well. The Estadio Azteca is used on a very frequent basis as well and has a lot of bookings. So I know why the questions have come. I got a question this morning about it on Twitter. I wish I had an answer. I don't even know if the clubs have an answer to this right now. And, I mean, they might be planning on some things and thinking about it and looking ahead. But right now, let's just deal with Tuesday night. Remember, you're going to get an extra week between rounds this year, unlike last year. It's not like you're going from Nashville straight to Mexico City, like you had to do last year with D.C. going straight to Monterey. You don't have to do that this year. There is a week off. So
a week off in CONCACAF.
Right. The quarterfinals of CONCACAF would begin after the Cincinnati match.
Right.
Not, say, 2 weeks from today. Or 2 weeks from yesterday.
Right.
It's going to be in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because you're coming off of that Cincinnati match and either traveling to Mexico City, which I think is the way it's set up, and we'll get some confirmation here in a second. You could play Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, and you do have some flexibility, and that might affect if there's a home leg the next week. Maybe you have a little flexibility if you're bumping it up to the Tuesday, if you can do it in that slot. TV factors into this as well, because this is going to be a high profile match. You might be able to make it work, but we don't know. Any luck navigating CONCACAF, Jimmy?
Not much. No, let me confirm you the answer. But I got a non-sar question. How'd you like AEW last night? From Jonathan JD on Facebook.
It was fun. I've actually kind of flipped back and forth on Wednesdays when I have time, which isn't all that common. I flip back and forth between AEW and NXT. So I knew the main storylines, but maybe some of the secondary people I didn't know as well. It was a good show. I mean, anytime you get a steel cage match, it's going to be a good night. And Cody Rhodes jumping off the top of the thing, that was pretty sweet. With the Crimson Mask, by the way. So you got blood, you got steel cage, you got backflips off the steel cage. It's a good time.
See, Eddie on Facebook asking, how good is the field up in Kennesaw?
I haven't been up there yet. The Twos play, they're not at Kennesaw, though. They play a preseason friendly this week, so I won't see it.
It's going to get rained upon a lot on Monday. From the way the forecast looks right now.
It might be in great shape beforehand, but we might not know what it looks like on Tuesday.
It is, again, it's that hybrid natural artificial surface. It should probably be able to take the rain better than, say, a straight natural surface.
Yes, it does.
And there will be probably, the way the forecast looks, at least 12 to 14 hours of dry weather.
This is not
going to be a Charleston situation from last year where you're going to get to the park and it's going to be flooded.
It's not going to be like that. I've seen games get delayed in Kennesaw because of lightning and a lot of rain come down during the delay. It drains pretty quick.
Yeah.
So with that much time, it'll be fine. I don't even know how kind of thick it'll feel with that much time in between.
Let's see.
Aren't they doing rugby up at Kennesaw right now as well?
No, they're at Life.
That's at Life. Okay.
Yeah.
Getting a couple questions from, think it's Christopher and I believe Sean asking this too. Leagues Cup. What are your thoughts on the Leagues Cup? And do you see Atlanta United playing in that in the future?
You hope they aren't.
Yeah, you hope they're not, because that would mean they're not in CONCACAF Champions right. League.
Unless that changes, because just to clarify, Liga MX is using its CONCACAF Champions League entrance in Leagues Cup. So
kind of.
Yeah.
Not necessarily exactly. So the way it goes is the Campeón de Campeones goes into Leagues Cup, which goes into CONCACAF. The runner-up of that goes in. They're in both. But then it's the next six overall table between the two. So it's not a guarantee that all four go through.
Correct. But they're eligible.
They're definitely eligible. And in MLS, those teams are separated. Then it's the next best team.
Right.
I would rather have overlap. I mean, look, even last year where Atlanta United played so many games, you compare that to Brazil, like we talked about with Osatu. In 2017, he played 60 games.
Yeah.
He started 41.
Yeah, I would even be willing to reduce the league schedule to 32 matches and just hear me out. If you're not going to play everyone in the opposite conference as it is, what's the difference by dropping two more and then replacing those fixtures with Leagues Cup? The other thing, too, we don't know what is in the CBA as far as, and this was not publicized by the players or the league in all the celebration over the new CBA. Did the players draw a line in the sand on a maximum amount of fixtures each year? And how would Leagues Cup factor into that? I don't even know if that was discussed. But I've heard that concern from players. We're playing too many matches. So I tend to agree with you. I like to see overlap. I think the more ties you have between MLS and Liga MX, the better.
More competition.
We saw that this past year when Club America came into the Benz. One of the best atmospheres there was all season last year. One of the best matches. More of that, please. And if it means that you're not going to play Vancouver, I'm willing to accept that.
Yeah, I am too. I think if you do that, you would have to have everybody participate in Leagues Cup. So nobody's only going to play 32 games and be left out of everything.
Right.
So everybody would have to go into Leagues Cup. And Leagues Cup might need to be two legs or something. Because you'd like to have a minimum of 34 games, not including Open Cup or Canadian Championship.
You could even do a group stage.
Yeah, you could do that. You could figure out some different ways to do it. I think ultimately, like the talk, big picture at one point was, oh, just combine the two leagues and go. I don't think that happens. I think they each have their domestic campaigns, but could you have kind of a mini league between the two, which is basically a group stage Leagues Cup? Yeah, I think you could.
I see you got some clarification on CONCACAF Champions
League. There we go.
Okay, good.
So if we do advance, we would host the second leg in the quarterfinal. And then in the semifinal, final, orders of the legs to be assigned with a team in each tie that has the better performance in the previous round.
Okay. So quarterfinals,
but once you get out of the quarterfinals,
semifinals where it goes to that.
Well, there you go.
John Nason, shout out to him. Said Wikipedia would be my friend in that, and it was my friend.
No, good. It's not always your friend.
Sometimes I have trust issues with Wikipedia.
But it is though.
On that. Some leagues is really good. The information that Wikipedia will give you, and some
not
it's
so
like
much.
Last time it was updated was 2015.
Right.
See on Facebook, Shiva's asking: is there a time this year that we are missing Joseph and Barco at the same time?
Well, there's no guarantee you're missing anybody. I mean, they got to get called up. Barco's not made a senior national team debut, so
Olympics would be definitely in the cards.
Yeah, but not for Joseph.
Correct.
And there's two different times. So I don't think so unless Barco gets a senior national team call-up for Copa America or Barco gets a call-up during the international break in March, which is an international break. You're not going to be missing any games.
Right.
So,
and Joseph has made peace with the Venezuelan National Federation.
You would think he goes back in March, and you would think he'd be part of the Copa America roster. Pitti Martinez could be part of the Copa America roster for Argentina, although he hasn't been called up in the last few windows. Barco, probably just U23 right now, but you never know. Maybe he gets that opportunity early. I don't think it's likely. I think Pitti would be more likely to go to Copa America than Barco would.
Do you see, I'm just, while we're on this topic, the relationship between Atlanta United and the U.S. men's national team is not the strongest right now. But do you see the possibility of a refused call-up or the club stepping in and not allowing a call-up in March for, say, Brad Guzan? I don't think Miles would be called up at this stage. Emerson Hyndman?
In March for friendlies, I don't know if you want to have that fight because it's not going to affect any games for you.
Right.
If there's any injury concern, then it's going to be a much more difficult conversation.
Right.
For competitive games, and when you get into Nations League in the summer with the semifinals and the final, you don't have a choice.
Right. But I'm just trying to think of potential call-ups to other nations other than Venezuela and Argentina.
The U.S. one's going to be tricky. Yeah. And U.S. Olympic qualifying is going to be tricky. Because
Hyndman would be eligible, right?
I don't know where the age cutoff is, like date wise.
Miles certainly is.
Miles would. I think Lennon would as well. So you're going to have some interesting conversations there because that qualifying tournament is not completely in an international break,
right?
So that's an optional thing for clubs, and the U.S. has a lot of players playing in a lot of different places and. More importantly, in a lot of different situations. Like, there's guys they would like to bring in who aren't featuring regularly at their club. Cool. That's easy. There are guys who are playing very key roles at a club that might not be able to afford to let the player go.
Right.
So it's a difficult challenge for Jason Kreis.
He is still coaching the U23s.
He's doing everything.
I thought I saw his name attached to something else.
Yeah, Fort Lauderdale, USL League One.
Yeah.
He's doing everything. Jason Kreis is coaching every team he can.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, hey, good luck.
See, on Facebook, Christopher Gersel is asking, could you possibly see an MLS and Liga MX creating a Premier League of the best clubs and doing kind of like a pro rail between that and...
I don't think so, because I think having the domestic league is very important. I think you could create something very unique, though, like... Copa MX is a group stage thing to give more games in Mexico. You are involved in the second division there. I think you could do some kind of a hybrid group stage tournament that goes on during your season, which means you're going to have a lot of weekend games and midweek games, but in the MLS side, you're going to have bigger rosters. You have to spend more money. These are things that can happen, but I don't think any of it happens before 2026. After that World Cup, if I'm part of that partnership on either league side and you have sponsors who are engaged and want to be involved in the game and grow the game because they had a good response from the World Cup, that would be something I would pitch, but it'd be a tournament, not a league. I think you need the domestic league. I don't think Mexico would be ready to give up that tradition of it. MLS is far less history. But I don't know. I just don't think it would work. I think you're better off making that a tournament.
Let's see. Not on Facebook, but I'm asking you guys, what do you think of Nashville, Nissan Stadium, opening up that 300 level?
You didn't type in the question?
No, I didn't type in the question.
Come on.
What do you guys think of...
Well, it's like we said last week. I'd love to see all red and black up there in that 300 level. I think that'd be really cool to see. It sounds like... They are at, if not over, 40,000 for this match, if I've heard things correctly.
Yeah, they worded it kind of weird. I think they're right around 40
now. Yeah, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. But, boy, if you could get that thing sold out. And, unfortunately, I think weather is going to be a part of the equation now. If you have, like, a beautiful 65-degree day, I think you'd get a huge amount of walk-up sale. That would probably not involve people from Atlanta, probably more people from Nashville. So I don't know how you really fall on it. Look, it's an expense, and the fact that the game's played at 8 o'clock means a lot of people are going to want a hotel.
Yeah.
It's an expense. I get it. I would just say if you have the resources to do it and you have the free time to do it, do it. It's a chance to be a part of something very historic. The first MLS match for Nashville... The season opener for Atlanta United, which could be the opening of a historic season for this club, we hope. If you have a chance to go, you should go. If you don't have a chance, you should listen to the radio. We always advise you to do that. But it's not like there's going to be a lack of things to do that weekend. We've mentioned what we're doing on Friday night. I'm sure the local Nashville supporters groups are, in fact, I think I saw something about a tailgate on Saturday. I'd have to look that up.
Yeah, Lady Knight's doing a big, big tailgate.
On Saturday.
And also, we're doing a promotion with Atlanta United, I believe Tuesday and Wednesday on Dukes and Bell. They're, Atlanta United's providing bus fare, basically. They're doing like a bus convoy. They're taking a round trip up there in a day.
Oh.
That includes a ticket and an entrance into their big tailgate.
Wow.
So it's be on the lookout on Dukes and Bell, like Tuesday and Wednesday. It's a very cool promotion.
That's a great deal. Yeah, absolutely.
That's crazy. Are you going up with Dukes and Bell?
No, because they'll be there.
Okay.
They're just giving it away.
About to say, if you're riding on a bus with Carl and Mike,
you won't remember half of it. Yeah. If you're on a bus with Mike Bell. That's
probably true.
Yeah.
Let's see. Question on Facebook is, do you think Brad Guzan will be picked as one of the three overage players for the Olympics?
The overage players for the Olympics, it's always a weird deal, because there's not necessarily rhyme or reason to it. I don't think he needs to be, because I think goalkeeper, there are some good young goalkeepers that should get that opportunity first. You got to qualify first off, which is something they haven't done the last two Olympics. So don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but I think goalkeeper's one where you don't need to go older here. I think you've got young guys who would be ready to do that. I wonder who the overage players would be in this group. I'm trying to think through what the group will look like. It's a really good group. I mean, you've got the potential for a Gio Reyna, who's breaking through at Dortmund right now. You're going to have to deal with Chelsea on Christian Pulisic, but he's age eligible. He wouldn't even be an overage player. Weston McKennie, you know, not all these players are going to be released by their clubs for the Olympics.
Right.
So you're going to use your overage players to fill in gaps. If you feel like you need a goal scorer, you know, maybe Josie isn't a player you bring in, but maybe you try to convince Josie's artist.
Yeah.
And that would be a good fit. Yeah. You know, that'd be the type of player.
And he's someone who has been a very good soldier for the U.S. Federation.
Would be a good reward for him. And honestly, and I've said it before, I think Josie's artist is going to be a contender for Golden Boot this year. Because I think Columbus will be very good.
Well, and getting service from Nagby now as well.
Well, Nagby, yeah, deeper, but out on the wings with Luis Diaz, you know, that's going to be good.
You want an overage player for the Olympic team. Nagby, who for some reason has not got, and now
I don't think he
reportedly wants it. He's been refusing some call-ups, but I just wonder if maybe things have changed for him a little bit now. Nagby would be a guy I would love to see on our Olympic team. I just think he could really settle things for you in the midfield
for sure if he wants it. I don't know if he really wants
it. And that's a great point. He might not want to. Time for one more if we have one more. I don't even know if we do.
Oh, I mean, this is a good question. Where was it? Thad on Facebook asked, how far away is CONCACAF Champions League from being for getting VAR?
Oh, included? Great question.
Know CONCACAF is exploring it. I believe they're working with Pro on implementation. I think Liga MX is involved too, because both have VAR. Right now, that would be who your video assistant referees would be. It would be coming from Pro and from Liga MX. So maybe a year away. I mean, I don't think it's that far off, because you know, you have protocols with competitions that have it. You have leagues in your confederation that use it. So you have personnel. It's not really a huge training issue. I think it could be next year. I think maybe even CONCACAF League could be something that where you implement it in the fall.
Does the lack of VAR in, say, Guatemala, Honduras, Jamaica, Costa Rica, Panama, other nations of the Confederation, does that, and I'm just talking about the infrastructure of having VAR in those domestic leagues, would that make it harder?
No, I think it'd be good for CONCACAF to do it. You'd have enough referees out of Mexico and the U.S. to fill those roles. Now, it'd be a big adjustment for those teams from leagues that don't have it, because we've seen it. I mean, the game's a little different with VAR. But you'd have the personnel who are trained. That was the issue with the Women's World Cup on both fronts, is You didn't have women who had worked in leagues with VAR. You didn't have players who had any of them had played with VAR. And you didn't have center referees who were used to having VAR. So it felt all weird the first round. This, I think, would be a much easier transition. You just got to create the protocols and where you do it. I think there's a very good chance you would do it from the World Broadcast Center for CONCACAF.
Yeah.
You'd have the VAR there.
And it'd be extremely easy to execute.
Yeah, because you have all the camera angles, you have everything.
We were there.
We saw it.
We saw it. We were there. We were not in Honduras on Tuesday. We were at the World Broadcast Center.
We were looking for VAR. We didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah. But we met a lot of nice people down there.
Yes.
On Tuesday night, so we want to thank them for that. Okay, so again, Tuesday night, we'll be in the stadium this time.
Yes.
At Kennesaw, 7:30 for the Five Stripes Countdown, 8 o'clock for kickoff at Kennesaw. I think there might still be some tickets left. I'm not positive. It was very, very close to sold out the last I heard.
And people for going, we'll be at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw right down the road.
Yes.
Please join us in your pregame with us.
And yeah, if there are still tickets left, snap them up if you can. That was an incredible atmosphere last year for that second leg against Irediano at Kennesaw. It's a different vibe than a U.S. Open Cup match there. It's a different vibe than an Atlanta United 2 match. It is really, and you said it this morning on the morning show with John and Hugh, every seat is close to the pitch. And you feel the game so much differently there. So if you haven't caught a match there and you're thinking about maybe checking it out on Tuesday, I strongly advise you to do it. The weather's going to be okay the way it looks. And I thought it was an entertaining match last Tuesday at Mataguan. I think we're going to get another good one this coming Tuesday. So that is 7:30, Tuesday night on 92.9 The Game. Next week's stoppage time, I know this is the last minute change. We're going to be on Thursday again, and then next Friday. And the bulk of the time that we spend next Thursday will be previewing what we do next weekend up in Nashville. But just have it on your calendar. That is what is coming up for us. Okay, I think we've pretty much covered it. For Jason and Jimmy, I'm Mike. We'll see you next Thursday for another edition of Stoppage Time here on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.